Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
What's happening across Connecticut? Melissa in the Morning's conversation with Governor Ned Lamont. Now on WICC 600.
Governor Lamont, welcome back to the show. I'm hoping you had a very nice Memorial Day weekend with your family.
Good morning, Melissa. It got better by Monday.
Good. Yes. Yes. Weather-wise, it did. It did. And so you enjoyed maskless and maybe with some loved ones or anything like that?
Well, you know, I'm now as governor, I missed my parade. So I did a Trumbull and I did Naugatuck. And I was really charmed to see everybody had turned out. Everybody's ready, A, to remember the vets, and B, I get ready to get outside and enjoy.
Yes, I did see that you were in Trumbull. Yes, you were right here in our area. So that was pretty cool. So I want to dive into some not so fun news, but, you know, this is what you do. You talk to the media about these things. The first one, I think, has been on the minds of many of our residents. I'm sure it's very much on the minds of you, your administration, lawmakers. The announcement earlier this week from House Speaker Matt Ritter was pretty unbelievable, suggesting that there are some, it's isolated, it is crossing party lines, according to Mr. Ritter, but there are lawmakers who have been drinking on the job. And I just think during the legislative session, especially, it hasn't really come across to me, Governor Lamont, that there's anything in writing prohibiting this. Is there? Let's start with that. Is there anything saying you cannot drink on the job while you are debating bills that could have massive impacts on your constituents?
I don't. This is a legislative building. They set the rules. I don't know that. I do know informally and have been told for years that there has been some drinking going on. It is the people's house. You are doing the people's business. Be taken seriously by taking yourself seriously and show the respect and dignity your office deserves, especially when you're in that building.
So the House Speaker addressed this with the media. The question was, so what do you do? It sounds like, and we may never know who it is. I think the biggest thing here, Governor, is the House Speaker said, look, we usually take assignments away from people who have abused their right, again, in this situation because of drinking. But a lot of people are saying, why aren't we removing them? Why isn't it on the table to remove them as lawmakers?
Look, that's the speaker's call. Look, 98% of the time, I think things do really well. Perhaps at the end of a session when the bills are passed and the budget is passed, is it okay to have a couple of cool Frosties with the friends at the end of the day? That wouldn't bother me, but it's up to the legislature. And what happened last week is wrong.
Okay. Do you think it's something that you'll be talking to the legislature about, kind of weighing in on it and giving your opinion on how it should be handled going forward?
Look, all I know is it puts a black eye on public servants. You know, you want to be taken seriously. People sort of knock politicians already. And those type of antics and incidents just are embarrassing to us all.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Governor Ned Lamont this morning, taking listener questions. We have a question, Governor, based on something that I think was posted by another senator on Facebook. I can't remember where this was, but it was sent to me via email. You mentioned to media that the gas tax and the truck mileage tax are both included in some regard in the budget. Republicans have said only three states in the District of Columbia are on board with this green initiative, which is kind of backing this gas tax. I'm just curious, Governor, does that kind of scream any concern to you that the majority of our country is not on board with this initiative?
Look, let me turn the clock back a little bit. We had a cap and trade system where you charge people to pollute on the electric grid, and our electric grid is almost non-polluting now. It makes an enormous difference. So, yes, we have teamed with Massachusetts and Rhode Island, other states soon to follow, Washington, D.C., saying, look, we're going to ask the wholesalers to pay a fee if they want to pollute. But ask the legislators what alternatives they have. I mean, we had a plan last year to get people out of cars into public transportation because we thought that would bring down greenhouse gases and do a lot for climate. Everybody said, nah. With this time, we have a small fee on polluters, and we think that would make a difference, especially for folks who live near roads, especially those environmental justice areas. It'll be easy for the legislature to say no, but you got to say, what do you say yes to? What are you willing to do about this? I've got a plan on the table.
And it sounds like, Governor Lamont, you are actually doing a rally later this morning to talk about your support for the Transportation Climate Initiative. What would you say is like the biggest sticking point? Why are you so passionate about it and hoping that even though there's a huge effort with Stop the Gas Tax going against your initiative, why are you hoping it presses through?
Because people oppose it, just don't take, climate change that seriously, or they pay it lip service but don't want to do anything real about it. And this is a way that we can, we're providing free bus service on weekends, getting people out of cars, giving kids access to the beach. This is the type of thing we can do if you have a transportation climate initiative. We can get all of our buses, electrified. What that means in terms of pollutants in our downtown areas. But let's face it, it's an easy one to say no to, and that's usually what the legislature does.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the fact that we are down to just days left of the legislative session ending next Wednesday, and still some pretty big bills that are on the table. I think the biggest one probably for a lot of people, one of the biggest, is marijuana legalization. Could you actually just talk about, I know there were some developments with this bill, and especially talking about equity. First of all, could you maybe talk about what has kind of changed recently with the marijuana legislation and where it's sort of at, and if you plan to sign it?
Sure. Really all of our neighboring states, we think now is the time to have a carefully regulated market for adult use marijuana. We've got that bill in place. It's been sitting in front of the legislature for a couple of months. But there's a little bit of a debate, probably more than a little bit, in terms of how that money gets dispensed, who gets it, how it gets allocated. And that could derail things. It's in the hands of the legislature right now. I think most people understand it's the right thing to do. It's a lot safer than surrendering marijuana to the underground market, which is so dangerous. But I'll have to see if the legislature can get there.
And I know, Governor Lamont, we have talked about, I think the last time you came on, we were talking a lot about incentives to get people back to work. As of May 31st, yeah. I believe, people had to prove every week that they actually could not get employment. And we had a question from a listener. Do you plan on continuing the federal $300 unemployment benefits, or do you plan to drop it like other states have done?
Well, it drops in the next 90 days. So don't count on this thing forever. It goes, I think it's mid-September, something like that. So and in the meantime, we have said as of a few days ago, $1,000 signing bonus, give you added incentive to get back to work. If you're a little COVID anxious, not quite ready, now's the time to do it. We've had thousands of people take a look at the website on how to do that. Hundreds have already signed up. So I'd like to think we're nudging people where they ought to go, back to work.
And again, we're talking to Governor Ned Lamont. I had another thing I wanted to talk about, Governor. Breaking overnight, the union representing over 2,000 group home workers called off the strike that was supposed to happen this morning. I saw from your office, you confirmed you got the withdrawal notices and everything. And while we don't really know the terms of the agreement, I can't help but wonder. You have now the group home workers who were threatening a strike. Last month, we were talking about healthcare workers. And I'm just curious, are you anticipating more either union groups or groups of workers coming forward and saying, listen, we need to be compensated. We need hazard pay. We need better benefits, especially coming out of the pandemic. I'm just curious, as the pandemic is winding down, do you anticipate hearing from more work groups threatening to go on strike if they don't get compensated?
I'm certainly hearing from more work groups, and it's not inappropriate. I mean, these are folks, we deem them essential workers. They showed up every day. You know, early on, we made a deal with the nurses. They couldn't Zoom. They couldn't virtual. They were at that nursing home every day at considerable risk, especially during those early days. Now with the group homes taking care of folks with disabilities, you couldn't do that by Zoom either. And I think they had been shortchanged over many years in this state. And I thought we had some catching up to do. And so, yes, we've made an agreement with those groups of essential workers. And we continue to talk to the state employees. For some of those folks who showed up every day deserve some combat pay.
So I agree. I couldn't agree with you more, Governor Lamont. I'm just curious because there are other, obviously, sectors. I'm thinking off the top of my head, obviously, I know teachers had the summer where they were at home for the most part and a lot of online learning, but they were still showing up. You've got construction workers, grocery store workers, postal workers. I'll throw the media in there. Like I said, I'm not trying to stir up trouble, but I know there are a lot of groups of people who, like you just mentioned, showed up during the pandemic and even had maybe some issues with their contracts before it happened. So do you anticipate seeing more of these potential strikes happening as the pandemic is kind of winding down?
Well, I think, look, food service workers, you know, they work for Stop and Shop, for post office, they work for the federal government. So they're not all, you know, on my ledger, so to speak. But more broadly, I think the fact that right now businesses have to do a better job of recruiting people back into the workforce. A lot of people are hesitant about getting back to work. And that means starting pay is going up. And I think that's a good thing. So if you're a waiter or waitress or retailer, food service, I think you're going to find a pay. Everybody's getting a little bit of a pay raise. Whether you call it combat pay or just a market that's working, it's a good thing.
And again, Governor Lamont, I know you and I talked about this the last time, but it was fresh news, actually, only a couple days after it had happened. I was curious if your office had any updates on the Amazon warehouse in Windsor. We know the last time we checked in, an eighth noose was discovered on the property. It's still not really clear at this point if this was a racial attack, if this was an attack on Amazon, if this was an internal, like someone who worked for the construction site or for Amazon. Not really getting into the full details on it, but Do you know where that project is at? I know there were calls to get a new developer. I'm just not sure, like, where that investigation is at and where your office is at with it.
State police are there. Top investigative units are there. Cameras now are everywhere. It's a case of some type of intimidation, racist intimidation, and it's outrageous. And somebody said, you know, well, how are they continuing to be able to do this? And somebody said, well, maybe, you know, many of these nooses were put down at one time and they've been discovered over a period of time. But who cares? Right now, we know that there's something stinks over there. There is a racist tendency. It is an effort to intimidation, and we are going to get to the bottom of it.
And actually, speaking of hate crimes, before I let you go, Governor, we actually had Gary McNamara on our show this week. Very excited that he's one of the 25 members picked for the Hate Crimes Advisory Group. What are your initial plans out of the gate for this group? What are you hoping comes of it?
So we've had an onslaught of hate crimes. What is a hate crime? It's not an inadvertent attack. It's an attack where they target somebody based upon race, color, creed, gender. And we want to know why it's happening and what we can do about it. And we have this commission, first time ever, made up of all the different demographics so we can do the best job we can at hearing them out. How do we work with trusted advocates? We've got millions on the ground to help secure public facilities, get the cameras up, as in what we talked about at Amazon, so we have more clarity in terms of what's happening. I think it's a long overdue, and I look forward to their ongoing reports.
Well, Governor Lamont, I always look forward to having you on here every other week. Thank you so much for checking in. Sorry for the technical difficulties earlier, but I appreciate you sticking it out this morning.
Sounds like a hot weekend, everybody. Get outside. Take care, everybody.
Thank you, Governor Lamont, here on WICC 600.
There are lines you cannot cross. And if somebody ever left this building and injured somebody or themselves.
That was part of the very public address that happened earlier this week. House Speaker Matt Ritter addressing reports of excessive drinking by lawmakers at the state capitol. Joining us again, we have State Senator Kevin Kelly here. I was just curious, and of course, I'm not accusing anyone in particular, but did you know anything about this? Had you heard anything or saw anything at the state capitol that made you think maybe people are drinking on the job?
Well, obviously, I saw the news reports and the video of the recent events, and that's always disappointing whenever you see something like that, because the work that we do at the Capitol, the people's business, is very important. And oftentimes, you know, very, very complex when you're looking at what we just talked about, budgeting and health insurance. These are complex issues, and the people are depending upon us to get this right and to pass great legislation for them. And so it's always disheartening when you see something like this. But Melissa, one of the things we have to keep mindful here is that there's 187 legislators in total, and we're a reflection of our communities. And alcohol is an issue throughout our society, and there are people who struggle with this addiction, and it is a disease. And you know, if they need help, you know, we should try to get them help to make sure that they stay on the right path. But these are things that are present, and it's why when we talk about the marijuana and making marijuana legal, I've always held that, you know, on one hand, the dynamic has changed this session where it's now a revenue issue. But I think there's a social policy issue, and we need to look at this more on, from the perspective of whether or not this is good for our society, because we know there are issues out there. It's present with regards to alcohol. It will more likely than not be present with regards to marijuana. And the question is, do we want to legalize that and expose what I would be afraid of, our youth, to it?
And Senator Kelly, I do think, you know, absolutely. Unfortunately, alcoholism is a horrible disease. We have it in our family. Some of the people I love the most have suffered from alcoholism. I absolutely get that. I think the thing that's disappointing with this story, and again, I've made it very clear to our listeners, according to House Speaker Matt Ritter, this is something that was isolated. It crosses party lines. And here's what I think is just disappointing about it. Is, again, talking about what you just said, these are huge topics. Like, I look at the public health option. Thank God that's off the table for now. Marijuana, the budget, zoning. I mean, I could go on and on. Gaming, online betting. I mean, again, the list goes on and on. This was a very, very intense session. Not that other ones haven't been. But, you know, we are relying on the people we elect in, and there are plenty of people who would love to represent their communities. We're relying on these state leaders to make the best decisions they think would represent their communities. And I just feel like at any other job would tell you if you're going to show up drunk. If I showed up drunk right now and I was interviewing you, not only would you probably never come back on my show, I don't know if I'd have any listeners anymore. I don't even know if I'd have a job anymore. I probably would not. And I'm just wondering, like, is there anything in writing that's saying, listen, you want to serve our state and you want to speak on behalf of your constituents, you can't drink. Like, to me, I know that the House Speaker said, you know, that assignments could be taken away. To me, why aren't we going back and checking the votes? Like, if we know of people who have shown up for big votes and were drunk or were inebriated, we need to reconsider that and reconsider if they, to me, should even be serving as lawmakers, I think. But maybe I'm wrong.
The legislators, you know, there's no handbook. There's no... you know, I'm going to say rules like you would normally have.
So there's no rule saying you can't drink and go vote on a bill.
In the sense that, you know, where the authority comes from is the state constitution and standing before your peers and your constituents every 2 years and asking for their support. You know, you're right. The task we have in front of us, reading, you know, state statute, reading federal statute, making sure that these are all work. I mean, it's exhausting. We go in, you know, I'm going to say we'll go in maybe around 9 or 10 o'clock this morning. It's not uncommon. Last night, I didn't leave the Capitol till 11:30 last night. It's a long day. It's an exhausting day. But it's a day when you need to look and make sure that everything's happening according to plan, you know, that you're reading your bills, you understand your bills, and there's a lot of work there. And that's why I said at the outset that I'm disappointed that there are members out there that take their job different, you know, they take the seriousness of their job differently. And that's what's disappointing, because what it does is it casts negative shade upon the whole General Assembly. It's just not to them and their district. But what it does is it diminishes what the rest of us do on behalf of the people of Connecticut, and it makes it appear that there's, you know, this attitude up there that this is more of a frolic than it is the seriousness of the people's business, because what we do impacts across the line, whether it's from economics to social policy to health and human services. These are all very big and weighty issues, educating our kids for their future. I mean, there's nothing here on the table that's, I'm going to say, easy. Everything has an impact and import, and we need to look at it from that perspective.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you, Kevin Kelly, and I so appreciate you, Senator, coming on, talking about this, and of course, everything else that's going on. I know we are down to the wire with the legislative session, and you usually come on Fridays, but the session is actually set to end on Wednesday, so I may have to call on you before we usually talk next Friday, but I thank you so much for coming on this morning.
Sure.
Thank you.
Anytime, and just thank the listeners. They're there every morning, and thank you for what you do to get these issues out, because I think it's important that the people know what's happening under that golden dome.
Well, thank you, Senator Kelly. I appreciate that, and I appreciate you coming on.
What's happening in Washington and how it affects you? Melissa in the Morning. Welcome Congressman Jim Himes to WICC 600.
Good morning, Congressman Himes. Thank you so much for being here this morning. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. Doing fine, thank you.
So I wanted to actually talk to you about one of our top stories this morning, and I was just curious kind of your response to this, honestly. It looks like another Connecticut resident is now facing charges in connection with storming the U.S. Capitol back in January. You were actually, I think, one of the first people, Congressman, to come on my show after that all happened on January 6th. You know, how does it kind of, I guess, resonate with you that some Connecticut residents were part of that attack on the Capitol?
Yeah, it's painful, obviously. I mean, I was there, and I was one of the last people out of the chamber. And so, you know, I was taken out of there by police officers with guns drawn, and, you know, saw the broken windows and all the stuff. So it's very, very personal to me. It's sort of doubly sad, right, because I usually brag on Connecticut politically. As you know, Melissa, we have a state full of people with really interesting political opinions. But, you know, people tend to cluster sort of towards the center. We got right-wingers and left-wingers. But, you know, I find our politics are pretty moderate and actually some pretty civil in this state. And, you know, so it's painful, obviously, to see people who decided that their political opinions should be backed up by violence and who have lost, faith in the system such that they were willing to do what we saw on January 6th. And, you know, it really worries me, right? You know, while Donald Trump, who inspired January 6th and who urged it on, is no longer president, I worry about the fact that the forces that led to January 6th, and most notably what they call the big lie, the big and obvious lie that this presidential election was somehow stolen from Donald Trump, still has a lot of believers out there. And that's really toxic for our democracy.
I did want to talk about something actually somewhat related to that. But now there is a little bit of proof in the pudding, and I'd love to get sort of your take on this. So I'm sure you're very aware of it. Dr. Fauci, who's been, you know, right at the forefront of the pandemic, he's been a voice for many people to rely on throughout this entire thing. This week, a lot of his emails were leaked somehow or released somehow. Many different news sources got a hold of them. And I've noticed that some news sources are pulling certain emails and showing what they think are implications of Dr. Fauci getting a heads up on the virus being artificially engineered. And you know, and there have been even talks just from the Biden administration saying there's something missing, like who missed something, and saying that this was not created in a lab somewhere. And that's starting to come out more and more. What has been sort of your reaction to it? Do you think Dr. Fauci knew anything about this ahead of time? Like some of these claims coming out of the emails would suggest there's something weird there with Dr. Fauci.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything weird there with Dr. Fauci, Melissa. And I think it's really important we pull this together because, pull it apart and look at it, because it's really important that people have confidence in the recommendations that doctors make and that the CDC makes. We've got too many people out there who today are going to die. They are going to die because they don't believe that masks are effective, despite the fact that the entire medical profession does. They don't think that vaccinations are a good idea, despite the opinion of pretty much the entire medical profession. So this is really important. And let's take it one fact at a time. I sit on the Intelligence Committee, so I think I've seen all of the intelligence that the United States government has on this question, and I obviously can't talk about a lot of it, but I can tell you two things. Number one, the consensus, and the consensus is that this was not created in a lab, which is what you said. And apparently, I'm not an expert on these things, but apparently when something has been created, you can tell. You can look at the genetic code and you can say, holy smokes, this was actually engineered, okay? So nothing's ever 100% certain, but that's pretty much off the table. So you're left with the question of, did this come down the way a lot of these viruses have come, you know, from a bat to a piece of meat in a store in Wuhan, or did it, as they sometimes say, escape from a lab? In other words, so the lab in Wuhan is doing research on this virus, which they find is naturally occurring, and somebody gets it. A scientist gets it. The scientist leaves the lab, and boom, now it's out in the wild, right? And what happens, happens. The truth is that today, the state of play today, right, 14 months later, we don't really know. And it is true that for the last year, people have generally adhered to the idea that it happened. They call it zoonotic transmission, right? That's like bird to pig.
Right, like the markets.
Market.
Mm-hmm.
Generally that's been the accepted explanation. But today, 14 months later, we still don't know for sure. And there's still a lot of people inside the intelligence community elsewhere and say, hey, look, there is some evidence that it might have escaped from a lab. So look, Fauci didn't know for sure a year ago. He doesn't know for sure today. And we got to be comfortable with that uncertainty because, again, this thing's brand new. And guess what? We can't send the FBI into Wuhan's lab to do all the investigative work. So, again, we don't know for sure exactly how this thing happened, but we shouldn't use that as a way to say, well, gosh, Fauci doesn't know for sure, and therefore I'm not wearing a mask, because that's a very dangerous line of thinking.
I agree. I think jumping to that conclusion, that's why I say to people all the time, you don't have to necessarily be the biggest fan, but I think ask your doctors, and most medical doctors will tell you that the vaccine is essential, that the vaccine is safe, that the vaccine is a tool. You need to wear a mask. You still need to socially distance. I think across the board, we have heard that even from our local doctors here on the show. I think where there also has been question, which is why these emails have been put into question too, though, is the fact that the CDC and Dr. Fauci don't really seem to be on the same page. You've got the CDC saying only weeks after Dr. Fauci wanted people to wear two masks, the CDC is now saying, look, if you're fully vaccinated, you're good. You could be in small groups, large groups, indoors, outdoors, whatever you want to do. And I think all of a sudden people are like, now, wait a minute, why aren't you guys even on the same page, let alone you want all of us to believe you? Again, I'm speaking from people who have voiced concerns to me.
And the CDC needs to do a very good job about being clear and consistent. No question about that. If there's uncertainty, that creates real problems that lead to real people dying, right? But also, look, we got to remember, and the reason I feel very strongly about this is that it got really politicized. So now all of a sudden we have a whole bunch of people, including myself, who don't know anything about, epidemiology, who are either rooting for or angry at Tony Fauci for reasons that are purely political. And here's what we need to remember, Melissa, and this is really important. We used to call this thing the novel coronavirus. Why did we call it the novel coronavirus? Because nobody had ever seen it before about 14, 15 months ago, right? Mm-hmm. And guess what? Scientists aren't perfect. They're learning too, right? So, early on, the CDC was just plain wrong about mask wearing. I remember, actually, you remember, last February, I was running around in gloves everywhere I went because we worried that this thing spread by touch. Well, we learned a little bit more along the way, and we discovered that it doesn't spread so much through touch as it does through, droplets and the, the vapor that we emit by. So they're learning too. So guess what? They're human beings. They make mistakes too. But please, please, please don't use that to say, well, son of a gun, I'm not going to go get a vaccine. I'm not going to do this because, they made some mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Well, Congressman Himes, I appreciate you talking about this morning. We appreciate having you on, and we'll talk again next week.
Okay. Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.